Hour number three, Darren Donick and Chase live here at Centennial Sportsplex as the Predators are getting close to wrapping up their on-ice activities today. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe. At 1 o'clock, we'll head over to West End. We'll hear from Vanderbilt head coach Derek Mason. Right now, it's Mitch Light from Athlon Sports. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm doing well, and I'm proud of myself. I'm well prepared.
You are.
I brought the pullover. I've come here many times with nothing but short sleeves, and you guys are all bundled up, and it's a little chilly in here.
Yeah, and I botched your team. You've got a Brooklyn Nets pullover on, and I botched. I don't know who I was thinking of. I Fratello was never the Nets coach. I don't know why I mess. I thought for sure he was with the Nets, but
he's a New York guy, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's been a lot of coaches with the Nets, a lot of
Boy,
bad coaches.
So. We looked it over in the break. Woof, there were some I definitely forgot about.
Oh, I remember them. I remember them all, and as Willie and I were talking about, I go back to when they played at the Rutgers Athletic Center pre-Meadowlands, and Jan Van Bredekhoff was on the New Jersey Nets.
That was the first NBA game I ever saw was at Rutgers, Piscataway, New Jersey.
We had just
against Elvin Hayes and the Washington Bullets.
We had just moved from Dallas to New Jersey. My dad got us tickets to a Nets-Knicks game, and I said, okay, who are we rooting for? He's like, oh, we're for the Nets. They're the home team. 30 years later, a lot of losses, or more than 30 years, 40 years later, and a lot of losses. But, hey, we're back. Brooklyn Nets. I'm fired up.
I said I was going to ask you right out of the gates.
Okay.
Houston's off to a 1-3 start. Their quarterback, Keane, has said, you know what, I'm redshirting, I'm shutting it down. I'm done. And he says that he's going to be back in 2020. In Houston, I don't believe that for a minute. Why would you shut things down and come back in 2020? So all the speculation now is going to be, okay, because we've seen this happen before. Obviously, Kelly Bryant shut it down last year, and he ended up at Missouri. He's a really good quarterback. When Oklahoma played Houston, Lincoln Riley was glowing about this young man. So the question is, where do you think he's going to end up, and how do you feel about him? You know, these kids just saying after 4 weeks, I'm preserving a year, I'm done.
He will be my prediction. He'll be the starting quarterback for Florida State next year.
Okay. Oh.
Kendall Briles is the offensive coordinator. He was the offensive coordinator at Houston last year when he put up those massive numbers. Oklahoma has spent this guy, Spencer Rattler, true freshman, five-star. They got a kid coming in. King's great, but I think ideally Lincoln Riley would like to develop, you know, have quarterbacks for more than 1 year.
Really?
Yes, I do, honestly. And I think they've got guys in their system that they feel really good about that Riley's recruited for his system. And, again, there's a comfort zone there with King and Briles at Florida State. I agree with you. I think what happened was he decided to transfer. He decided to redshirt. He was going to transfer. Dana Holgorsen or whoever got a hold of him and said, hey, you can weigh all your options at the end of the year, but why don't you just say you're redshirting. You can stay here and use our facilities. You can work out with the team. You can be a member of the Houston Cougars. If you announce you're transferring,
right, you're out.
You're out. I remember who's a kid a couple years ago transferred from Eastern Washington to Washington as a grad transfer. One of the ones who did to Washington, no, to Oregon. Didn't work out, but it was a thing where the Eastern Washington coach was like, you're done here. Like, he had to finish the second semester, and they wouldn't let him work out. I kind of don't blame the coach. You've quit on your team.
Yeah,
you're going to Oregon. Why should we let you use our facilities? Well, in this case, he's still a Houston Cougar, and, you know, it opens the door if he wants to come back. A wide receiver, one of his teammates, did the same thing. And Jameis Williams is his name, a kid from South Carolina's top recruit last year. Played as a true freshman last year as a safety cornerback. He just announced that he's transferring. So, you know, I'm fine with it. It's an unintended consequence of a really good rule that teams are using to their advantage with getting guys in there who've been hurt or getting some freshmen some experience. And it's not an epidemic by any stretch, and it's not great for Houston, but tough, you know. Yeah, I think we're going to see some more. You know, Auburn had a couple of guys transfer last year at this point. We're probably going to see some more names come out this week and next week. Because
I think it's going to happen at Tennessee this week. I think there's going to be guys that are going to be like, I'm out of here.
And, you know, teams like Vanderbilt have only played three games, so teams that have had a bye have another week to get four games in. So, hey, if guys want to transfer and preserve that year of eligibility, that's fine with them. It's just high profile because it's a quarterback at Houston, a guy that we all know.
are you going on the assumption that that Florida State staff is still going to be there next year?
Yeah, I mean, okay, he will be wherever Kendall Briles is my prediction.
Okay.
So
with that being said, there's a real shot, that there could be some massive openings this offseason, which will have Urban Meyer pegged for all of them. But Florida State could come open.
I can't see Urban Meyer at Florida State. I could see him at USC.
USC could come open. Michigan could come open.
Michigan's not coming open.
Well, Jim Harbaugh could leave and go to the NFL.
Could, yeah. I'm not saying that.
I didn't say how.
He's not going to get fired.
I didn't say he was going to get fired. I said he may leave.
Yeah, that's much more likely.
He could just punt himself and go to the NFL. So, what, you know.
There's no natural fit at Michigan. You know, I've thought about this, and, you know, and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe you don't want the natural fit. You know, Brady Hoke was an old Michigan offensive lineman. Seemed like a good fit. Didn't work. Jim Harbaugh's another story. Rich Rodriguez was no fit at all.
Oh, my gosh.
And it didn't work out. So you just need to go out and get the best coach that you can. So it's becoming harder and harder sometimes to pry guys away because people are making so much money now. And you go to a school like Michigan, which has cycled through three or four coaches since it was last really nationally prominent. Or, I mean, you know what I mean. They've been prominent in recent years. They've come close. But someone might say, why should I leave my job where I'm making $3.2 million to go make $4.5 at Michigan and be under that microscope?
Yeah. Rough day at the office for Dick Starkel and Arkansas.
I watched home
to San Jose State.
I watched a decent amount, more of that game than I probably should have, just because it was – but yeah, I mean, and it was no fluke watching that game. I mean, they Starkel
five
was
interceptions.
Just tossing all over the place. And San Jose State's got a really good quarterback there going up and down the field there. That is a horrific loss. San Jose State has been one of the worst teams in the country in the last two or three years.
They've won like four games in 4 years or 3 years or something like that?
It was their first Power 5 win since beating Stanford in 2006. They actually beat Stanford three straight years, and then they haven't done anything since. They're, I don't know if you guys saw the post game, though. Their coach is actually a really good guy, Brent Brennan. He was an Oregon State assistant, really energetic. His dad played there, and you could just Dawn Davenport was doing the game, and she interviewed him, and she's like one of those, "Coach, I'll let you get back to your team to celebrate." And he was on the far end. And after he said thanks, he sprinted to the, you know, the 13 San Jose State fan. But the team was there, and you could tell the players were just.
It's a big deal. It's a big deal for them.
Huge win for them because, you know, it doesn't matter if Arkansas is not any good. Going on the road to beat an SEC team, you know what, Darren? It just means more.
Well, you know what? In Fayetteville, you know, that's a crazy fan base, and they expect to be good, and they're not good.
And they had just one guy, but they had and I don't know how highly ranked he was. I just saw right after that game, you always wonder how it's going to affect recruiting. They had one of their commits reopen his, you know, recruitment there. So, yeah, I mean, you look at the landscape in the West, and you can say this about a lot of teams, but right now the path for Arkansas, it's difficult to see them –
They're buried.
Once you get that far down in that division, it's hard to fight your way back up. And they, you know, it's only year two under Chad Morris, but right now
it does not look good.
By the way, that's a little similar to what we were talking about yesterday.
I know we're gonna get into that. So I don't know if you've seen this or not. Joe Hansen to squirting water our way.
If I had a lawyer, he'd hear from my lawyer.
If you guys saw this, then you know I'm telling the truth. If you didn't see it, you think I'm making this story up. Do you know who Starkel's blaming his performance on? You obviously haven't seen this.
I have not seen this.
Justin Bieber.
Okay. I did. No, I saw that.
He is a huge Justin Bieber fan. Huge. He wears a Justin Bieber shirt underneath his jersey, and he tweeted out after the game, I've shredded my Justin Bieber shirt, which Justin Bieber responded to.
Right.
He's like, I've got to focus on winning football games. I've gotten rid of my Justin Bieber. It's like, first of all, that's ridiculous.
So watch out, whoever Arkansas plays next, a focused, Bieberless Starkel is
like
going to be
how
ready.
How ridiculous is that story? I got to focus on football. I'm getting rid of my Justin Bieber shirt.
There's some great material for the fan base of the other team to heckle. I can just see the big, you know, the cardboard cutout signs and stuff.
When he was at A&M, he posted a video to the Ellen DeGeneres show to try to get him on there to meet Justin Bieber.
He needs to focus.
That's how big of a fan he is.
He needs to focus on some other things. It sounds like.
Yeah. Is that not crazy?
That's pretty good.
Okay, one of the other stories is Auburn. How about their start, and how about their win at A&M?
Yeah, I mean,
that is a huge win.
You could argue they have as good of a resume as any team in the country with wins, a neutral site win over Oregon and then winning at A&M. It's funny what the quote-unquote narrative is. I mean, Bo Nix's stats aren't great. He threw for 100 yards, but he makes two or three quote-unquote winning plays a game, and their team's undefeated. So he's, you know, I'm not taking credit away from him. Just like, at some point, they're going to need to be a little bit more dynamic offensively against the schedule they play. But with a true freshman quarterback and that defense, for them to be 4-0, obviously great things. And Tulane's a pretty good team, and Tulane's got a good offense, and they shut down Tulane. So, yeah, I mean, it's a little early to really consider that, especially with the way LSU and Alabama look. I haven't changed my opinion of the top of the West there. But, hey, you know, very typical Auburn fashion, the most schizophrenic program in the nation. When, you know, not much is expected, that's when they go on and win the West.
More with Mitch Light from Athlon Sports on the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Predators training camp winding down for the day. We're over here at Centennial Sportsplex for Darren Donick and Chase, along with Mitch Light from Athlon Sports. So, Mitch, we were just talking about Chad Morris and the challenge facing Arkansas, where they seem to be sort of going the wrong way. He's only in his second year. He had a huge amount of building to do from the start. Contrast or compare that with Tennessee right now and where they are. I'm curious, in all of your assessment of the program as a group over at Athlon and predicting where they were going to go, do you think it's just an issue of the players not being quite as good as you guys thought? Because they're not performing at the level that most people had them predicted, fair to say?
Yeah, Tennessee was an interesting team this offseason. They got a lot of buzz in the offseason. I think some people even had them in the preseason top 25. And Bill Connolly, from formerly of SB Nation and ESPN now, he has his S&P ratings, which I think are the best out there, had Tennessee as a top 25 team. I personally was not believing in Tennessee this offseason. In fact, I had them last in the East in our meeting, but I got outvoted by others, and we ended up with Tennessee fifth. The thing that concerned me about them was last year, sure, they had the two big wins over Auburn and Kentucky, but they had six losses by 25 points or more. And to me, that doesn't look like a team that's close to turning the corner. I'm a big believer in, like, margin of victory and how competitive you are, and they were alarmingly uncompetitive in several games. And then you fast forward to this year. Now, on paper, they've got the talent at wide receiver. They got the talent at running back, and we thought they had the talent at quarterback. The big issue is on both lines of scrimmage. And if you're not good on, you know, both lines of scrimmage, it's an uphill fight. And then in preseason, they get the news that Emmett Gooden, their only, you know, defensive tackle with experience, it goes down with a torn ACL. They get Solomon, the kid from Michigan, eligible. So it's hard to judge because they're not good on the lines. But I'm not buying that they have no talent. And it's, as you know, you see how Butch Jones left them a mess. I mean, it wasn't in great shape, but there's some players in that program. I think it falls on the coaching staff as much as the players. They're just not very good right now.
So that is where a lot of people are. We had this debate yesterday. Do you just pull the plug? There's all this. Well, maybe Philip Fulmer comes in there in the interim, but then you start over again. And there's the other argument that, hey, look, you've committed to Jeremy Pruitt. You got to give him time to build consensus. But if you don't think he's up for the task, is it too early to judge him as a coach? That's a really tough place that they are right now in the grand scheme, especially facing the next few. The next section of the schedule is very difficult for them.
I'm a firm believer, and if you don't think he's the right guy, it's never too early to pull the plug.
Really?
You're just prolonging the inevitable if that's the case. The problem with Tennessee is the man making the decision is the man who hired him, and he's his guy. Yeah. It was a very controversial coup, the way it happened. Phil Fulmer comes in. So it's going to take, in my opinion, Phil Fulmer longer than normal to come to that realization, if that's indeed the case. He's there behind the scenes. He sees these guys operate this coaching staff, so maybe that's not his determination. Now, there's a very sound argument, Willie, for just saying, you know what, it's been disappointing, but we've had so much turnover. Coaches grow. Coaches develop. Let's give him at least a third year. That's a very rational argument, too.
Especially when you look at the cost that it would take when they're already paying – Right. Number one in the league in buyouts.
Yes and no. But, I mean, if you get the right people cutting the checks there, it doesn't really matter.
The problem is he's coached 16 games, and in seven losses they haven't even been competitive.
Yeah, no, they've
been run off the field.
That is a problem, and I get the whole turnover. Then, you get a new staff coming in. Like, this is going way back, but remember when Todd Turner came to Vanderbilt, he probably saw Rod Dalhauer in action and said, you know what, 2 years, it's clear he shouldn't be coaching in college. He probably doesn't want to be coaching in college.
Yeah.
We're cutting ties after 2 years.
Yeah.
And you've got to do that if you're running a program and it's the wrong guy. But, again, the problem is if you hired that guy, then how clear can you look at it?
All right, so you saw LSU up front. We discussed this. You've watched Georgia, you watch LSU. Compare Georgia and LSU live from the sideline.
Well, this is something it's kind of reverse. LSU's better on offense, Georgia's better on defense.
Isn't that crazy to think?
Yeah, and that's kind of the message I got talking to the coaches, this week, before playing LSU. I think Georgia has the ability to be better, not better than LSU, but better than they've shown on offense. I just think they're very conservative, and I'm sure you guys have talked about that. Kirby Smart's game plan, just really not opening it
up
much.
Yeah,
and it was enough to win, but, Fromm's a really good quarterback. But LSU's wide receivers are night and day better than Georgia's. Georgia has two really good five-star freshmen that will be good, but LSU's are more experienced, they're more explosive. I was talking to Cole Kubelik, who was there from the SEC Network. I said, I can't imagine a wide receiving core being better than this. Alabama's is probably better, but I haven't seen them in person. He's like, Alabama's are more track guys. LSU's are more physical beasts, and you saw that. And, Vanderbilt, you can't simulate that in practice. You saw some guys, some DBs just taking horrible angles to try, turning.
One step behind, it was over.
Right, well, yeah, it reminded me of A.J. Brown last year at Ole Miss. Just one of those, he's one of the most physically impressive athletes I've seen in person that close. And, wide receivers, you really appreciate being that close to some of their strength and their power. LSU's run game isn't great. That's a concern, but Burrow's is fantastic. Their defense was tough to evaluate. They were missing three front seven starters. They did give up, 38 points, but, two defensive touchdowns there. So I think LSU's really, really good. Very few programs have changed their DNA in such a short amount of time as LSU has, and because they are, I can't wait for that LSU-Alabama game. My guess is LSU will score, but Alabama will score a lot. That Alabama offense is so good that I don't think LSU can slow them down.
You got some FaceTime, by the way. I don't know if you got texts saying, hey, man, you were trying to get the front row seat to the play right there at the goal line.
I was right there.
They show Mitch. He's peeking. He's like leaning forward. He's like, okay.
Whenever I see that on TV, I was like, who is that old guy? Because you don't think, I was like, all that gray hair. But that's a case where, I'm not a trained referee. Those guys do it for a living. I was standing like from me to you to the ref when Kalijah Lipscomb tried to make that catch, and I would have bet it was a catch. And then going back and replay, because I was like, then people I go down and talk to, not the coaches, some of the, the personnel on the sidelines, like, I was right there, I think it was a catch, and then you go back and you look and you can see why they called it no catch. It was very close. I can elbow my way into the shot, yeah.
All right, so let's get your thought on Vanderbilt from here, because it's such a huge, you could make the case this is the game of the season on Saturday. It won't be from anywhere outside of Nashville, outside of West End. But this is so important for them to get back into the right mindset and go beat somebody. If they think they're just going to show up and win, I think they're going to have a problem, right? But they've got to use what they've learned from playing this really difficult schedule. So where do you think their head is?
Right, I think their head's actually in a really good spot. Like, I'm in the locker room after the game. I don't like to talk about, what the coach is saying and all that because, it's kind of privileged information and all that. But I will say that I talked to Derek Mason about this after the game. I thought his message was great. It was like, guys, we're 0-3. We get it. It's not where we want to be. We think we're a good team, but, you got to be realistic. Fans and media, we sit there and be like, well, of course they're going to lose to Alabama and LSU. Teams don't think that way.
Right.
But after the fact, he was just like, we've played
two tough teams.
Two of the best teams in the country. They go on the road. They play Purdue before Sindelar gets hurt, one of the better quarterbacks in the country. So I think he was very realistic. I think the team, I interviewed Kalijah Lipscomb after the game. I thought his – he got it as a senior. He got, he's been on two bowl teams that have had to rally late in the year. So I think they understand why they're 0-3. You could argue it's the most difficult schedule in the country. But to your point, Willie, it's not just, okay, we're past that difficult part of the schedule. Now we can go win some games. they're going to have to go play well, you know, against Northern Illinois, who's, you know, has been a really good defensive team in recent years. Not as good. They lost some of their best players there, but they played, you know, they played Utah. They played Nebraska. They're coming off a bye week there. So, yeah, I mean, you can't understate or overstate how important this game is.
Are you on a strict schedule, or can you slide out for? Can you do a Chris Collins or slide out rather than slide in slide back in?
I will.
Or do you need to go?
I will do as much sliding as you'd like.
Okay, because we would like to pick this up. But
on the ice, you can do some sliding.
I'll go back to the bullpen, and you know, just call for the.
I think we're gonna have Matt Duchesne on the other side.
Fine,
we'll come.
Get a professional hockey player on.
We will come back with Matt Duchesne, and then Mitch Light will slide back into the picture to close out the third hour of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's back. Mitch Light is back, just like that.
We brought him back. We did not take him out of the
ball
not. Game.
So it was
we
unofficial.
We put him in the outfield, and then we brought him back in. Like David Johnson did it with Jesse Orosco and Roger McDowell back in the day.
As long as he did not exit the game, he's still in the game.
He's still in the game.
We're going to push a player to 12:45 to close out the third hour of the show. Don't forget Derek Mason at 1 o'clock.
Mitch Light here with us and talking some college football. I didn't know who was taking it. Sorry. I didn't know who was taking the ball.
You guys are out of your comfort zone. It's a road game here. You need better communication on the lines.
Yes. So you were talking about teams like LSU, and looking at the top five in the rankings, I think it's pretty self-explanatory. Those teams are legit. Florida, that played Tennessee, the ninth-ranked team in the country, they're 4-0. I see a lot of flaws with them, though. I feel like that they are a 4-0 team because of who they've played. But do you think that they're legit now with Kyle Trask at quarterback?
Well, I think kind of what you said. I think I'd throw Oklahoma in that mix. I think there are six elite teams. And then after that, there's a big drop-off, and we don't know. So Florida, which has defeated three Power 5 teams, Kentucky on the road, Miami in a neutral field, and then Tennessee, why not? I mean, every team has flaws at this point. You know, I'll agree, you know, that their offensive line concerns me. They got to get healthier. Zuniga, their, you know, defensive end, and Henderson, C.J. Henderson's been hurt, their cornerback. So I don't know if this is a top 10 team in a month based on, you know, who they have to play. They got to play LSU soon. But I'm fine with Florida being a top 10 team right now. I know Tennessee's not very good right now, but they dominated Tennessee, and Trask has played basically three halves of football, and he's answered the bell. He's played very, very well.
Do you think their results are just, you know, because of Dan Mullen, because of the coach? The coach is helping them win games that they necessarily shouldn't. Like, Miami was such a sloppy game that could have gone either way. And I think Dan Mullen just showed that he's a veteran coach, and they were
able to win. He's really good. I'm a big Dan Mullen fan, and, you know, They got outplayed against Kentucky. They found a way to win. Is that coaching or is that Trask playing well?
Yeah.
It's a lot of factors, and then they just beat a Tennessee team that they're quite frankly they're better than, and they're better than Miami. So, you know, part of the reason we liked Florida at Athlon Sports in the preseason as much as we did last year and this year is because of Dan Mullen. I think he's clearly one of the better coaches out there.
It always seems like, Mitch, that there's a team that pops up that you go, you either didn't know, you just had questions about, or they just pop up out of nowhere and make you think, oh, okay, they're pretty good. To me, that team is Auburn. And Auburn was a team we had a lot of questions about with Gus Malzahn. If there were any coaches in the SEC that you could say their seat was warm, I think it would have been his. Sitting 4-0 right now, and I'm going to be honest, I think they're for real. Now, are they beating Alabama, LSU, Georgia for real? I don't know, but I think looking at that tough SEC West, they're pretty for real.
Yeah, and, you know, they're very good defensively, one of the best in the league, one of the best defensive lines. Bo Nix has made the plays he's needed to make to win games, but, you know, 13-31 against Auburn, 19-27 against Tulane, 12-20 for 100 yards against Texas A&M. At some point, I think they're going to need to be a little bit more dynamic in the passing game. They've had some wide receivers hurt there, and their schedule is, you know, against that schedule, you know, obviously they're the SEC West team still, and they play Georgia as well. So this is, I'm not ready to put them with the big two yet, but clearly a surprising team.
I feel like Texas A&M might take a little longer than we thought with Jimbo Fisher, that it wasn't going to be just a quick, here they are competing for national championships. I think Kellen Mond is good, but I think it's going to take him a little bit longer just to get for Jimbo Fisher to get his recruits in there and put his stamp on things.
You're on, I know, regularly on college station, yes. Radio station. I'm curious how they felt. I mean, they had a great atmosphere. I mean, it was packed. It's the 2:30 game for CBS, and they can't score against.
It's the fourth straight time Auburn has won in college station. That's one of the big mysteries in college football. Is since Texas A&M's joined the SEC, I've been there. It's a great environment. They have unbelievable fans, the largest student section in the country.
It's amazing.
And they don't win at home. They don't win big games at home. They you know, even going back to Kevin Sumlin with Johnny Manziel, you know, they won, you know, their big win was at Alabama. So, and they were drinking, they're drinking the Kool-Aid, the Jimbo Kool-Aid. Basically, I was on the radio last week. It was like, all things being equal, we've got Jimbo and they have Gus, so we're going to win this game.
I'm curious, like, just going towards Chase's thing. They paid all this money. They have a great atmosphere. They put all the resources you could possibly put behind it. And I remember Jimbo Fisher's first – remember his first SEC media day, he was asked, what's your timetable for a national championship? I mean, it's in that half of the league.
You don't spend $500 million to go 8-4.
Right. And, but it's such a tough challenge. Like, right. What are you supposed to do? What are you supposed to do differently?
By the way, they're going 8-4 with someone.
Yeah, exactly. They are recruiting at a high level, but you know who's also recruiting at a high level? Alabama, LSU, Auburn. You know, everyone does there. So, you know, they lost their best running back, Corbin, Jayshon Corbin. They got a true freshman there. Mond is, I don't know if you want to say he's taking a step back. He hasn't taken a step forward this year. They're pretty good defensively. They're not great. You know, we talked last week, Braden Gall and I did on our podcast a lot, like whoever lost, that was a fan base game. Both fan bases needed to win that game because they both have to play Alabama and LSU. And the fan base that loses that game, it's like
freaks out.
They overreact, season's over. You know, if we can't beat that team, how are we going to beat those teams? And not only did Texas A&M not win the game, they didn't look very good. They couldn't run the ball. You know, they battled and they made it a one-score game. But that's one of the huge barometer games. You know what it used to remind me of? Before, when Georgia was just kind of putzing around in the 90s and stuff, when Tennessee and Florida were always the two best teams, Georgia and South Carolina, it was always early season, and South Carolina was getting better, and that was one of those barometer games where if you lost that game, we can't beat that team, how are we supposed to beat Florida and Tennessee? That's the feeling I got from this game.
Is Will Muschamp in trouble?
It's not a great situation right now. You know, the North Carolina game just killed them.
Yeah,
because that's
changed
everything. That's a game you got to win. Then you know, Bentley gets hurt. You know, some people say Helinski's better. Some people still haven't paid their bet from Helinski not starting in week one.
I say Helinski's better.
Some people still haven't paid their bet from Helinski not starting in week one. Darren, sorry, I lost my train of thought.
It was week two
by the egregious.
I actually thought they looked good against Alabama.
Yeah, they did.
Showed well. They had moments in that game.
That's a big play, some chunk plays. They did not play offensively. They were brutal at Missouri. Now, they were in the third quarter, they were close to cutting it to four-point game, and then they threw a pick six, which turned the game around, but their offense really sputtered. They didn't run the ball well. They get Kentucky at home, a Kentucky team that they've lost to five straight times. I think there's a lot of heat on Will Muschamp.
That's a freak-out game for the loser.
That's a freak-out game, yeah, especially South Carolina because they still have some tough games to go on that schedule there. You know, I thought before the season that this was going to be a pretty good team that might struggle to go 6-6 because of their schedule. Now I'm not sure it's a pretty good team. They might not be the best team. And then I talked about Jameis Williams, their top recruit from last year, is transferred. You know how fan bases react to recruit, you know, to top players transferring. They love it. So, you know, it's not a great situation.
I said yesterday on the show, not that I thought it was going to happen, because I don't believe it'll happen. I said if they truly wanted to get things fixed in Knoxville, kind of going back to our conversation, because I don't believe, look, you can say it's early, but I agree with you wholeheartedly. Look, if you just know, it just doesn't look like it's the right fit. It doesn't look like Jeremy Pruitt. This stage may be too big for him. But, you know, I guess things can turn around. I don't believe that they will. If you really wanted to fix it, if you wanted to get back to prominence.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
get him $10 million a year, five-year guaranteed deal. Get Urban Meyer and be done with it. Just convince him to come and be done with it.
Just convince him.
And tell him to, you know, this is how you turn it around.
Did you see the Mark D'Antonio press conference yesterday? Next question. He's Urban Meyer's not going to Tennessee.
Not for 10 million a year, 5 years guaranteed.
He's not going to be head coach of Tennessee.
Okay,
I'd say it's USC or nothing.
But Urban Meyer, why are you so adamant about that?
Because at his stage of his life, with his health issues and all that stuff.
Oh, they're really health issues.
Come on.
He has documented health issues. If you talk to people. He has documented health issues.
I mean, it seems to be bothering him more or less, depending on
what's the stress
going on around.
The stress does
There's stress induced.
It does.
You can make
is.
Fun of it, but it's been documented. So, are you going to go take over a Tennessee program?
Don't be stressed there.
Where the team might be 4-8, and the fan base says you hired Urban Meyer, so you should win a national championship the second year. Or are you going to go to USC? So, for a lot of reasons, and if he cares about his Florida legacy, which I don't know if he does. He's not going to Tennessee.
Okay.
But in the light of the freak-out game, right, South Carolina, Kentucky, Vanderbilt, Tennessee. Before the season, we were talking about how huge the games between those four teams would be. It's even bigger. Now, even leaving Missouri out of it, let's just say Missouri looks pretty good. Just the games between those four teams, that's going to tell a huge part of this whole story.
Yep. I mean, that's one reason.
For all four of those
programs. You look at all these division races, whether top of the division, bottom of the division, there's so many swing games, and you lose those swing games, nobody likes
Nobody's
it.
Happy.
Let's end right here so I can pay up my bet.
Okay.
And then we'll come back and close out.
How are you going to pay
third.
Up your bet? I don't see any money or gift cards.
I don't remember what. I've got gift cards for you. Willie can tell you. I've got gift cards for you. I can hook you up.
Da Vinci's Pizza?
Yep, Da Vinci's Pizza. $50 gift card just with your name on it. How about that?
I like Starbucks. I can't eat the pizza.
I'll give you a Da Vinci's gift card and a cooker gift card. $100 for the cooker.
I'll show up at the cooker on West End and be like, I really want some rolls.
Good to see you. Thanks for doing this. Enjoy a game on Saturday.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Mitch.
Mitch Light from Athlon Sports. He's also the Vanderbilt sideline reporter. We will come back and
Daniel Carr
will join us to close out the third hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase.
Every time you take a sip in this smoky atmosphere, you press that bottle to your lips.
Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Not sure what the
Not
theme
a country
is.
Music fan?
Well,
it's Brad Paisley.
Okay.
Sometimes
I get what Max is doing back there or studios, but today I was a little lost on that.
Just
one.
Shaking it up a little bit.
Okay.
Every now and then,
okay.
You know.
We're live here at Centennial Sportsplex. We're now joined by Daniel Carr, who has stopped by our table. Daniel, how you doing?
Good, thanks. How are you guys?
Great. How has everything been to this point?
Oh, it's been awesome. It's been awesome so far. I mean, that intro with the country was pretty good, too.
Yeah. Are you a country music fan?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So this is the right place for you.
Yeah. If you're from Alberta, you kind of have to be, so, yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
That is the preferred choice?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Big time.
They love the country music out there,
yeah,
they?
Yeah. Country music and pickup trucks. So, yeah. If you don't have a pickup truck, you're out of place.
Something's wrong with you, right?
Yeah, and then if you bring your pickup truck to Nashville, they're like, what are you doing? So, but that's okay.
Did you bring your pickup truck to Nashville?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So what is your song or group of choice?
I don't know. I like basically everything. I mean, High Valley's from right... about a couple hours from me. They actually are from like 15 minutes from where my mom grew up. So a big High Valley fan. I actually met him a few years ago at an airport. So when I had my Habs stuff on me, so they kind of just they looked at me once and they're like, I knew who they were. And they're like, who are you? So, yeah, it was pretty cool.
So what has this been like for you when you found out that the Predators were interested in you know, bringing you here? What was that whole process like?
I mean, for me, it's been awesome so far. I mean, I got here middle of August, you know, kind of get settled in and, you know, it's, you see why the organization's been so successful and, you know, like all the guys and how they conduct themselves every day and, you know, the staff and everybody, you just see why everything works here. And then you get on the ice and practice and see how fast the team wants to play. And I mean, you see why everything's works here, and it's been awesome so far for me, and I'm just excited to hopefully keep it going.
Matt Duchesne said after the win, the exciting win on Saturday night, that it was the loudest and biggest preseason crowd he's ever played in front of. You told us during the break that you played in, what, game two of the doubleheader against Florida, that we talked about it that night and the next day, like midway through. I mean, the whole time, but midway through, I remember in the second period, they're doing the wave, they're singing. It was pretty crazy, and it's a Monday night preseason game.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. I think I played here a few times as a road team, and you see how like passionate the fans are about hockey. And I mean, it's awesome, and it makes it fun as a player. So, yeah.
What are you looking forward to bringing to this team? What excites you about? You talked about a little bit how upbeat or fast the system is, but what really excites you?
Well, I think the opportunity to play with a lot of the guys here. You know, like there's so many great hockey players here, and it's such a deep team up and down the lineup that like no matter who you're playing with, you got guys that you can produce playing with. And I think that's, you know, you got guys who you make plays to them, you're going to get the puck back, and it's as a player, it's exciting. And just for me, just try to get open and score some goals.
Well, this is something you've done, Daniel. And look at your stats, and it's been pointed out by people that have, you know, done their homework on you, that you've had success scoring even at the NHL level. Yeah. That's usually the hardest thing to do. Yeah. So that's got to be a confidence boost for you to know that you've done it some.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I'm just, like I said, I'm just excited. Like you look at the lineup here, and you look at like up and down the forwards, the defense, like all the D, you're going to get the puck in good situations as a forward. And I think for me, you know, it gives you a really good opportunity to produce. You just got to execute, and I think for me, that's what I'm most excited about. And I mean, you know, I'm not taking anything for granted here, because I still got some work to do and to make sure I'm here for opening night. And I'm just excited about it, though.
You have you've scored everywhere you've been. So what are the things that, like, for example, last year you won the MVP in the AHL. What do coaches tell you? What do hockey people tell you that, okay, here's where you've got to get to that next level to stick in the NHL?
Yeah, I think my skating when I first turned pro was, you know, kind of, but I mean, I think it's gotten a lot better. And I think for me, you know, I've been pretty open about this. The best opportunity I had to become a mainstay in the NHL was my third year pro. I made Montreal at a camp, and personally just didn't. Just kind of stopped making plays and stopped, kind of became vanilla is the way I'd describe it. Like you'd go out there and you didn't really do anything wrong, but you didn't really do anything great. And I think that year I just kind of had a tough year, and it's been for me working back to get that opportunity again. And, you know, hopefully now I just keep working at it, and hopefully it comes.
You got to like, there's been some great success stories over the years. And I always love the stories of the guys that sort of take the long road. You know, 4 years of college, you got to pay your dues in the minor leagues. You got to take a couple cracks at it before you stick. But what do you think has kept you going through some of those times? Because that's part of it. You have to have that drive to push through.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot. I think the other thing you learn as you go is, you know, not to sound like a huge kind of like sports nerd or life nerd here, but like you read about the people who you have to enjoy the hard parts of it. And I think for me, that's one thing that I got some really good advice that year pro when I was struggling from an assistant coach who was in Montreal. He just said, "Carsey, this might take you. Like this isn't you have a good game and everything's all good. And now this is going to take you a long time here." And I think as soon as he told me that, that's when it was just something clicked that you gotta really enjoy the hard parts, the after practice stuff, the before practice stuff. And if you don't, then you're playing the wrong game. So it's, I mean, that's been a big thing for me. And I think that's kind of helped me get to where I am.
Daniel Carr is here with us, Predators forward. How much did last year in the American League, your season there, do for your confidence? Because I know confidence is everything in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things, you know, confidence kind of comes and goes, but it's how you handle yourself when you have it and when you don't. I mean, you can never get too high, never get too low. I know it's kind of cliche, but I think for me it was just like getting the reps and just making plays all the time. You know, you kind of have a really long leash in the American League where you just, you know, you know, like the thing was, if I made a mistake, I was back out the next shift, and it was. So you kind of got to work on making those plays and executing. And I think as the year went on, I progressively got better at just always at completing those plays, which led to a lot of offense.
I listened to you talk and your story, and kind of compare it to myself with my career of having to be patient and work your way up and pay your dues, and you get chances here and there, but then when you finally get the one that you've been looking for, it's like you take everything that you've learned as you go. And the biggest thing that stood out to me was patience, and just being patient and knowing that it's not going to just be handed to you. It's not going to come quickly. You have to work at it. And I feel like it's the same way with you, is now you're here with this team trying to make it be on that opening night roster, that you've learned a lot of patience in your journey.
Yeah. I mean, I think you kind of hit it right on the head. It's one of those things where, you know, sometimes you're not exactly where you want to be, but you got to make the best of it. So, yeah.
And coming into this team, you know, knowing that they've won the Central Division title the last couple of years, but, you know, had a first-round exit last season, what's the vibe you've gotten from them of their determination to keep going further?
Yeah, you can see guys are, you know, no one here is satisfied. It's exciting to see. You know, I've not in the NHL level, obviously, but I've been around enough. But I've been fortunate enough to win a national championship in college and go to the finals last year in the American League. And you see that's what it is. It's so, you know, like I said, I'm just really excited. And so, yeah, I don't know what else to say.
Well, one thing you brought up, you just referenced it, which I think is pretty cool. We watched, for example, last summer, just across the street here, Vanderbilt baseball team won the national championship. Just we were kind of along for the ride, you know, watching them every week and things like that. That journey, as he gets heckled by
everyone is heckled.
He's the new guy.
Even Pekka's giving
giving you grief. Austin Watson come by and giving you a little grief.
you expect that from Austin, but not Pekka.
But I mean, just the culmination of winning that last game. Regardless, but we're talking. He went to Union College, right? So that's, we think college hockey. We're more of in football mode here. Union is not on the radar, but for hockey, it's a great program.
Yeah.
But that has to be something that there's going to be reunions 10 years from now, 15 from now.
Oh, yeah.
You get back up there, and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, we still got a group chat with all the guys from when we won, and it's still like I'll get off the ice, and I have like 30 text messages, and it's like, man, some guys need something more to do.
get a job, guys, or something, right?
Yeah. Well, a couple of them are still playing in Europe, so you'll wake up and like you'll have like 20 texts where they're texting each other.
Because it's a different time of night.
Oh,
for
them. Yeah. It's a polar opposite, right? So, yeah. But
we talked about this the other day real quick, because you played in Montreal. Got to play with Shea Weber, one of our favorites from here. What were some takeaways from playing with Shea?
Oh, you just see, like, just his kind of leadership presence all the time. I mean, I was kind of texting him a few times when I got here, and, you know, you just kind of see, like, the guys here, you can tell who they learn from just from the way they conduct themselves. And I can't say enough good things about the guy, and you know, he's awesome. Like,
let's end with this, Daniel. What would it mean for you to be on this opening night roster and to start off here with a home game on that Thursday night against the Wild? What would that mean, and what would that be like for you?
Do
you let yourself go there or no? Because you're hesitating. Do you let yourself go there?
Yeah, I try not to, because it's kind of one day at
a
time, right?
Sure.
Like, that's when we were talking about the stuff before. I think that's kind of been one big thing for me, is always kind of try to, it's like so cliche, but it does help. It's just one day at a time. So for me, it's more worried about tomorrow, or more thinking about tomorrow than let's not get to, let's walk before we run.
I was going to say, how about, if that happens, then we'll catch up to you right before.
Yeah,
then.
Let's talk then. Yeah.
Okay, all right, good deal. Hey, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Good luck with everything. Daniel Carr, really appreciate him coming by and closing out the third hour. We'll come back, final hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase next.